Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Spiritual Unity Radio Network, a station dedicated to the concept that all manifestations of the divine are equally valid. Join Reverend Terry Power HP, Robin McKean, and all the hosts for programming covering a wide range of spiritual topics, right here on Blog Talk Radio. Terry and Robin's Power Hour, a show where we create our own reality. Thanks for joining us. So pull up a chair and enjoy the adventure. And now, here's Terry and Robin. And good evening, everybody. Good afternoon. Good morning. Good wherever in the world you are. This is Reverend Terry Power, and you are listening to the Power Hours with Terry and Robin, my darling, my love, my partner, my best friend, most wonderful person in my world. Hi, darling. How are you tonight? All right. Apparently, there's some difficulty on Robin. So, everybody, so we'll see what's going on with her, and we'll get that back in just a minute. So, tonight, we are going to be talking about the ritual work, and continuing our series. We have been kind of dismantling and talking about each component of ritual in its turn. And going over each of the components. And we're getting some technical difficulties here. I think Robin's going to have to call back in. Because the connection apparently on her end is not working right. So anyway, we've been taking apart all of the elements of rituals and talking about each one in its turn. We have gone through the the call of the quarters, the casting of the circle. We've gone through the, the calling of the deity and inviting deity into our circle. And now we're going to be talking tonight about the actual magical working, the energy working of the ritual. And Robin, are you with us now?
I am.
All right.
Can you hear me okay?
Yeah, now I can hear you. I called on you earlier and you're not there. So glad to read it back.
Well, yeah, I can hear you, but you sound like you're cutting in and out to me.
Okay. Well, we'll find out if people are hearing that as well. But right now, let's go ahead and continue. I was telling the listeners that we are going to be talking about the actual working that will be done in a ritual. And we're going to approach this kind of in three parts, whether it's a small group, a medium-sized group, a large group ritual. So because sometimes logistics are different for each. So So what are your thoughts on the actual working, the energetic working at the ritual?
Well, you know, I think that whenever you're doing a ritual, that this should be part of the ritual that you're doing, is doing some sort of working either as a give back, you know, as an exchange for what you're being granted or what your, you know, desire is, or a community effort to accomplish something, for example, a healing, or, you know, somebody needs a job, you're trying to, you know, send them good juju for that. And and you know, whatever people want to do.
Well, even the type of working is going to be different depending on the group that is meeting.
Mm-hmm. Yes,
you know,
that's very true.
You know, if it's a small group and you're, you know, you have a working group or coven,
mm-hmm.
You're going to do sometimes more more personal, more intimate types of workings, like you said, maybe a personal healing or a job or you know, something for a member of the group.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas a, you know, some ritual that has, you know, 20 people or so, your working is going to be a little more, I don't want to say generic, but a little more broad. It's
mm-hmm.
going to be more for all the people in the group rather than an individual.
Right.
And then with a large group ritual, the workings will tend to be more toward manifesting in the world. Although I have seen large group rituals that did work where each person was getting, you know, something maybe for individual prosperity or individual relationships to be improved or something like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah,
you know,
logistics,
to me,
of course. Go ahead, I'm sorry.
To me, workings fall into a couple of different categories. And then once you've determined what type of working you're going to do, how to adapt that to whether you have a large group, small group, or something in between. You know, a lot of groups like to do, you know, personal inner work or, you know, like you said, you're getting something. You're going to all plant a communal seed together. Everybody gets to go up to the cauldron and, you know, plant a seed, or they're going to do something. They're going to write something on a piece of paper, and everybody's going to put it in the cauldron, and then you're going to burn them, whatever it's going to be. And if you have a group of 12, say, that's a very practical thing to do. But if you have a group of 150, maybe that's not so practical. So you have to, like you said, you have to think about the logistics and how this is going to work. I think all too often you go to these large rituals when people who have planned lots of rituals in their time but only planned them for, you know, a maximum of 15 or 20 people at their home forget that time will expand. You know, if you've got 150 people who are all going to have to get pieces of paper and write on the pieces of paper and walk up and throw them in the cauldron, it's going to take quite some time to do that, as opposed to, you know, like if you have 12 people. So there may be a better way of doing that. Say that again?
Or if you have multiple helpers.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, a better way to do that would be to, you know, have people pick up the piece of paper from whoever is standing at the gate going into circle with a little pencil or something to write on. And then you have people wander around with bowls or small little cauldrons, and everybody throws it in as you walk by. And then those helpers take them to the main cauldron and dump them in. That's going to be a quicker way of doing that than having everybody, you know, walk up to the cauldron and throw their piece in.
Right. Then the combining all of them together kind of becomes
mm-hmm.
part of the ritual where you're actually combining everyone's requests, whatever, into the single
right.
big cauldron, and you actually make that part of the working itself, the combining.
Right, exactly. So there are always better ways of doing things if you're with more people. It just takes a few minutes to figure out, you know, how can we speed this up, streamline it, and make it easy and keep it simple.
Well, do you have a general timeline or time guideline for the working itself?
Well, one of the things you have to remember when you're doing a big public ritual is that you're going to have people of all ages. You're going to have young people and you're going to have senior citizens. And you don't want senior citizens, for example, to have to stand if they're not up to it for a very, very long time. So I've always tried to maintain keeping rituals to under 45 minutes start to finish in a public setting, unless you post it and you're doing, you know, and it says in the invite to the ritual, you know, this is going to be an all night voodoo ritual, or this is going to be, you know, a puja that's going to take, you know, hours for us to recite, and you know, so then people are prepared before they come, and I think that goes for even, you know, a regular, you know, opening ritual. You should say opening ritual will be approximately 30 to 40 minutes, and then try to stay on that time track. I'm not saying you should wear a watch and do it to the minute, but, you know, be mindful that people have to stand and kids have to stand and be quiet, and that's really hard for them. I once went to this ritual, and once after the ritual was over, I happened to be speaking with the high priestess, and she was very, very irritated that people had brought children to the ritual who couldn't stand still, that they were wandering around in circle, and it was completely inconsiderate to everybody. But meanwhile, it had been a ritual that had run at about an hour and 20 minutes. And, you know, after about 20 minutes or so, kids start to get antsy. And no matter how good a kid it is, you know, a five-year-old kid, after about 15, 20 minutes, start to get antsy. And so, you know, the parents let them kind of wander around, and they didn't make noise, and they weren't real disruptive or anything. I actually thought they were pretty well behaved, considering we were there for so long, but she was very perturbed by that. And I mean, I didn't say anything to her at the time, but, you know, you have to be mindful of really what you're expecting people to do. Now, if you are, you know, it's your coven and you've got the 10 or 11 or 8 or 5, however many you are, of you, and you bring your, and you agree you're all going to bring your kids, then you know what you're getting into. And you might want to include something to keep the kids occupied on a small scale, which it's very hard to do that when you're planning for 150 people at a public ritual, because you don't know how many kids might or might not be there.
But if you're doing something where you're playing with dirt, well, the kids are going to be engaged as well as the adults.
Right. Well, I was going to say, I think it's always a good idea to do something that no matter somebody's level, it's universal. Anybody can do it. Anybody can push a seed into the dirt. Anybody can, you know, pull the petals off a flower. You know, whatever it is that you're going to do, try and keep it simple and keep it something that everybody will know how to do. And this is one of those things that also goes to chants. I often go to rituals where people want to chant, and they just assume, everybody knows these chants, which they don't. Some people might know the chant but don't know it well enough to know all the words. And then the chant kind of falls flat. And instead of being something that brings everybody together and raises energy, it's kind of everybody murmuring and, you know, it doesn't seem to go well. So I implore you, particularly in large public rituals, if you're going to use chants, use things that are universal, that everyone will know. And this is where I'm going to say something that's really unpopular in a lot of pagan circles. If you're using a chant to raise energy, it really doesn't matter what the words to the chant are. It can be row, row, row your boat. Rather, it be row, row, row your boat, and everybody knows the words and can contribute in a very mindful and concentrated way, than have them worrying about they don't know all the words to the chant, and so they mumble. Because you're not going to get the best energy out of them if that is the case. If you need to give people a little...
Yeah, I was going to suggest to keep it short, no more than maybe four lines, and teach the chant before you start.
You can do that. You can do that as well, but it takes more time. I mean, if you've got a medium-sized ritual, that's maybe a good thing to do. If you've got 25, 30 people standing in circle, maybe that's a doable thing. But again, if you've got 150 people and you're trying to talk to them all at the same time, it's a lot easier to just pick something everybody knows.
Okay,
everybody knows row, row, row your boat, you know. Everybody knows, you know, little twinkle, twinkle, little star. I mean, these are, and there are reasons why everybody knows these. You know, and it stands to reason that, you know, the ceremonialists say that it's better to use, like, a Solomon's seal because everybody knows Solomon's seal, and it, down through the centuries it has been used and energy has been given to it and blah, 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 blah. Well, wouldn't that same theory hold true to a song like Row, Row, Row Your Boat that everybody knows, everybody has sung, everybody has given energy to it for, God, hundreds of years, because this song has been around forever. It's simple. It's around. People sing it. Kids sing it. It's got lots of positive energy attached to it. And rather than trying to teach some chant because it's pagan idea to raise energy in doing something together, whether it's singing Row, Row, Row Your Boat or Twinkle, Twinkle, Little Star or, you know, we all, you know, return to the goddess. Doesn't matter. All that matters is that everybody can contribute, and it's heartfelt and it's energetic. Now, we'll probably have lots of people writing into the station telling me that I'm a terrible person for saying that, but I have found... I'm sorry?
I said, we look forward to your letters.
That's right. We look forward to your cards and letters. I personally have found, as much as I love listening to chants and as much as I love listening to pagan music, it has its certainly, you know, I love it. And we support it a lot here on the station. But if I'm going to do a ritual with 150 people whom I've never met before and I don't know the level of their experience, but I want this to be a great experience for them. I want them to feel confident and comfortable in that circle. Use common elements that they will know, that they've known and have been exposed to. First of all, they're not saying anything or singing anything they don't understand. You know, everybody from when the time they were a child knows row, row, row your boat. They don't have any poor connotations or fear about what they might be saying, or misunderstanding about what the words are. If you're doing a public ritual with a bunch of people you don't know, and you really want them to have a good experience, keep it common, keep it simple, keep it joyful. If you're going to spend 20 minutes trying to teach people the chant that you want them to chant later, I don't know. It just never comes across really well on a large scale. Like I said, if you've got 20, maybe 30 people max, and you can teach it to them quickly, that's great. Or if you have little slips of paper that you're going to give people with the chant on it, that's okay, except that now you've got people reading in circle, and they're worried about reading the words and how are they pronounce these words. Are they pronouncing them correctly? Do they know the tune? I don't know this tune. How do I sing these words? The idea is, in ritual, as with so many other things, as far as I'm concerned, people should be able to do it automatically. It should be something they don't have to think about. If they have to involve the forebrain, they're not going to have a intuitive, ecstatic experience. This is why people have ecstatic experiences doing things like knitting and crocheting and spinning, you know, spinning yarn, because it's something that comes automatically. Once you get it down, you can do it without thinking about it.
No, absolutely. I mean, that kind of repetitive, well, I mean, there's any number of, you know, of examples of that, from a chant to, you know, Hail Marys. I mean, let's look at some of the great ritualists in history in the Roman Church.
Mm-hmm.
It's Eat Up It.
Yeah.
And Hail Marys become that kind of repeated
yep.
words, and becomes a mantra, and then you slip into the ecstatic experience.
Mm-hmm. Which is what we're trying to do in Circle. Right, and
exactly.
This is what we're trying to do in Circle. Now, if you have 12 people in a working coven and you want everybody to you know, use a couple of different chants, and you're all going to memorize them together, that's great. I mean, I'm not saying that you shouldn't do that. You should. But it's a very different thing to be going into a public ritual with a bunch of people you don't know who've never been in circle together before. You got to keep it base. You got to keep it an even, you know, playing field. And the most successful rituals I've ever been to in public have done just that. Everybody claps, or everybody ohms, because everybody knows how to do that, or you sing a song that everybody knows.
Well, I mean, you mentioned we all come from the goddess. I mean, that
mm-hmm.
is such a common
mm-hmm.
common chant that
right.
that's almost a pretty safe bet as well.
Yes, except that there are people who don't know it. Even today, believe it or not, there are people who don't know it, or who don't know it well enough to chant it. They are familiar with the song, but they don't know it well enough to chant it. So, again, that's one of those things, though, that you could poll everybody. You know, if you've got 30 people in circle, you can say, hey, does everybody know this chant? And everybody raise their hand who knows it. And if you've got a good majority, then okay, fine, go with it. But if you ask that question and 4 people raise their hand out of 30, you're going to have your work cut out for you. And then at that point, I would say, hey, does everybody know Twinkle, Twinkle, Little Star, or Row Your Boat, or, you know, whatever other childhood song, you know, Miss Mary Mack, you know, I mean, whatever it's going to be, whatever you want it to be.
We have a big spin on Twinkle, Twinkle, Little Star. So, you know, we can pull down the star energy and do with it. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and you know, you can do that. You can say, we're going to chant these words that are on the slip of paper, but we're going to chant it to Row, Row, Row Your Boat. Or we're going to
yeah.
chant it to Twinkle, Twinkle, Little Star. And that's why there are so many chants that have similar tunes, because people have taken the tune that everybody knew and changed the words over the years. Certainly the Catholics did that.
No, I, you know, absolutely. I get it. Let's see now. I did want to talk a little bit about what kind of working. So, I mean, we've talked a great deal about chant, which really goes to the raising energy conversation that we're going to have. So, you know, some of the working, some of the things that we can do, I mean, we can do anything, but,
mm-hmm.
You know, what, let's just look at a small group like that, little working group, maybe you know, 12, 13 people. And, you know, we mentioned at the top of the show specifically things like one of our members needs healing.
Mm-hmm.
Or the family member of someone in the group needs healing.
Right.
And, you know, what kind of working would you do toward healing? You know, specifically, what would the working be like? or feel like? I mean, not feel like, but what would you do?
Well, you know, again, this goes to everyone's tradition. You know, somebody's not feeling well in the group, everybody can come together and you know, play music, or they can dance, or they can create, they can do correspondence. This goes back to sympathetic magic versus energetic magic, and magic of change. There are lots of different types of magic, and you have to decide on the level of your group what type of magic you're most comfortable with. You know, sympathetic magic, you could make a puppet of this person, and you could make the puppet, you know, healthy and well and paint it pink, or you know, wrap it in green, healthy plant leaves, or however you want to express the person's health. If you wanted them to get a job, you could do the same thing. You could take the puppet and you could dress the puppet in work clothes and, you know, expensive things, and put jewelry on it and say, you know, may you get a job that you can afford this. So you can dress that puppet. You can. There are so many workings and types of workings you can do. It's limitless and boundless. Yeah. You just have to have an imagination, and you have to have a consensus in your group about how and what you want to do.
Well, puppet magic is so great for that sympathetic magic. Mm-hmm. You know, I've used puppets for 20-odd years. And, you know, you can, like you said, the color of the fabric, you know, putting herbs and stones in the stuffing, how it's decorated, and then each person put something in it or on it that adds their mm-hmm. energy to it.
Yeah.
And something like that is
and
very
people get
powerful.
Carried away with thinking that, oh, I'm not experienced enough to make a poppet. Well, if you have an old T-shirt, you can make a poppet. Just get an old T-shirt, cut out a form. It doesn't have to be fancy. And you can use fabric glue if you don't sew, and glue it together. And then throw some kind of stuffing in it. It doesn't have to be fancy. It could be paper, for all we care.
Yeah, pine needles.
Mm-hmm, right.
I'm gonna fill it with anything. I'm going to tell a quick story here, and then we're going to take a break. Because mm-hmm. we are at the bottom of the hour. To your point, people think that these poppets have to be really complicated.
Mm-hmm.
I was down in Haiti, as many of you have heard. I've made numerous trips to Haiti for work. And my second trip down there, I had arranged for a voodoo priestess in Haiti to prepare for me three uncharged voodoo dolls. And these poppets that I was presented, I was amazed at the simplicity and elegance of them. If, you know, a child could have made these, but, you know, I got them from a genuine voodoo priestess in Haiti, so they're still a treasured possession of mine. But it goes to the point that these were simple cutouts with a little bit of decoration, a little bit of hair attached to them and various places to symbolize whether it was male or female and that sort of thing. But that was it. And the energy that you put into it is the important part. It's vaguely human-shaped. I mean, if you took a gingerbread man cookie cutter and traced around it, that would be good enough. So, you know, I just wanted to reinforce what you had said with you know, my own experience dealing with, or, you know, with this, you know, these voodoo dolls.
Mm-hmm.
New Orleans voodoo dolls are a completely different creature. But, you know, regular old, you know, poppet magic doesn't have to be particularly fancy. So,
right.
With that, I do think it is about time for us to take a quick break. And interestingly enough, we're talking about voodoo dolls and poppets and trips to Haiti. And our guest coming up on Thursday night, two nights from now, is Utu Witch Doctor from the Dragon Ritual Drummers.
Yay, Utu!
Voodoo priestess from New Orleans, Miriam, will be joining us on Thursday night. And in honor of that, I thought we would play a song by Dragon Ritual Drummers called The Fall, and subtitled Maid and the Dragon. So everybody stick around. This is The Fall by Dragon Ritual Drummers, and we'll be back in just a few minutes.
International Pagan Radio, a 24-hour, 7-day-a-week streaming radio station. We have informative Facebook page, interactive Facebook group, absorbing interviews with musicians, engaging shows with excellent hosts, and dynamic interviews with spiritual leaders. Come join us. We have the very best pagan music from around the world. We feature artists such as Dave the Bard, S.J. Tucker, Murphy's Midnight Rounders, Elaine Silver, Izon, Brian Hinkey, Robin Renee, Fawn, and so many more, all available for your listening pleasure 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. We are also available on TuneIn Radio, so go to www.internationalpaganradio.com. It's all pagan, all the time.
Listening to Terry and Robin on the Spiritual Unity Radio Network. We're glad you're here. And now, back to the show.
And welcome back, everybody. This is Reverend Terry Power, and you are listening to Terry's and Robin's Power Hours. So, Robin, are you back with us?
Yep.
All right. So, during the break, we did play that advertisement for International Pagan Radio, and do want to remind people that our Tuesday night show is rebroadcast on International Pagan Radio on Thursday, three times during the day,
yep.
Once at... I think it's 4 in the morning, noon, and then 8 o'clock at night. And if you listen to the 8 o'clock show, then you can immediately come over here at 9 o'clock and listen to Under a Shady Tree. So you can get a double dose of Terry and Robin on Thursdays. Before the break, we were talking about poppet magic. And, you know, poppet can work... You know, really for small to medium group, but poppet magic really gets impractical when you get to larger sizes. Now, I wanted to mention one more thing about poppet. Once you get that poppet to symbolize in your mind and in your heart the individual that we're giving the energy to, it really doesn't matter what it looks like. If it makes it easier for you to put some doll hair on it of the color of the hair of the person that it symbolizes, then, you know, by all means do that. But again, the energy of it, as long as it symbolizes that person, then, you know, the energy does its job, and that's what sympathetic magic is all about. So, Robin, you were... also talking about some ideas for larger groups, and
mm-hmm.
You know, we talked about small and medium groups, but what are some of the things you can do with larger groups that work with the logistics of, you know, 100 people?
Well, you know, other than, you know, obviously you're not going to have, you know, 150 people making a poppet. You know, you can do something similar. You'd have to have something more the size of a scarecrow that you give people things as they walk into circle and everybody can, you know, put it on as they're leaving, or have everybody parade, you know, past it, but that would take quite a while if you had a lot of people. So, you know, the other things you can do is you can put a little kit together before the ritual, and you could give people pieces to go home and make a poppet based on the energy they started in your ritual, and they can finish it at home on their own. There are lots of different ways to include that, but you know, Poppet certainly is not the only form of sympathetic magic. One of the common ones you see, and I mentioned it already, is everybody plants a seed, or everybody gets seeds, take home and plant. You know, it's there's always something you can do, and I like sympathetic magic to be used in groups because it gives people something to do. They're enacting what we want to bring into reality. That's the whole concept of sympathetic magic. You're doing something physically in the world to mimic what you want to have happen in the universe. So you want abundance, you plant a seed because it's going to grow and be fruitful. You know, it's just one of those easy things for almost anybody at any level of magic to do and understand, and it's very effective. I mean, sympathetic magic is probably one of the oldest forms of magic out there.
Well, I mean, yeah, because if it looks like, then it is.
Yes, exactly. You're bringing,
that's the whole essence of sympathetic magic. If it looks like it, then it is it.
Mm-hmm. And exactly.
And so you can channel energy into that very easily.
Right.
You know, I'm sure that stuffed animals probably started off as some sort of poppet magic.
Absolutely. Every doll. I mean, you know, vintage dolls are often nothing more than material stuffed together that look very much like poppets. And that is where dolls came from.
Yeah. Yeah, give a body to the imaginary friend.
Uh-huh.
So, you know, planting seeds. Now, I like the idea of, you know, you were talking about, you know, a kit or something like that where someone gets the stuff and they can, it can be charged with everyone's energy, and then they go off and do it,
uh-huh,
you know, at home.
Right.
And, you know, maybe put that poppet or that object, plant the seed. It could be something as simple as you know, some bags of stone and some stone. A helper takes the bags around, and everybody gets to reach in and pull out a stone.
Mm-hmm.
And the stones are charged for whatever
mm-hmm.
purpose.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
everybody gets a bottle, and they fill the bottle from the cauldron.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So anything that encourages people to be fully participatory, and that's an important part, because we've been to large rituals where we became spectators,
mm-hmm.
and that becomes somewhat flat. Now,
yeah.
I know with 150 people, it's difficult to have everyone engaged.
Mm-hmm.
But that is our responsibility as ritual leaders to
mm-hmm.
find ways to engage people. Let them get their hands moving on something. Even if they're just holding a rock,
yep.
It matters.
The idea to me with any ritual, as the high priestess and the high priest running that ritual, it is my responsibility to give the people or the each individual person who comes to that ritual a good experience. And not just come on in circle and say some chants and we'll hold hands and, you know, and go home. They've got to feel it energetically. They've got to get something out of it. It's got to be a palpable experience for them so that they can go away from that ritual and say, wow, that was awesome. I had a great experience. I felt
mm-hmm.
this. This happened to me. You know, I was a part of it. And you're validating their... Yeah, exactly. You're helping them validate their spiritual choice.
Right. We are an experiential religion.
Exactly. And this is what we're, this is what our responsibility is to validate path. Even if their path is different from ours, if they come to our ritual and they have a positive experience, they feel something, they get something out of it, we've done our job.
Right. They're going to go off and be a better Wiccan or a better Gardnerian or a better Asatru or a better whatever for that experience. Because what we all share in common is far more than what we are dissimilar. And so when we have a group ritual where people experience something, then they go off and they are better at whatever path they choose because they had the experience. They touched the divine in some way, large or small, they touched the divine and they felt that connection. And that will carry on for the rest of their path. So, no, I mean, absolutely. I mean, and giving people some way to be a part of it. Like I said, even if it's just holding a rock, they're physically doing something because the body needs to do to help connect to the action, the energy, the everything. Physical motion should be a part of it.
Yeah.
You know, pushing a seed into a small, you know, cup of dirt is an action. You're doing something. You're touching. We are tactile creatures, we humans. And when we touch something, we connect with it. And so, you know, anything that gets us moving, gets us touching, is going to connect us. It's going to add or deepen that experience. So, you know, I strongly encourage things that will get people to move their hands and touch and feel. Because that matters. It really does deepen the experience.
Yeah, but don't touch and feel other people at ritual unless you've been asked to.
You had to take it there. I wasn't going there. I was talking about dirt and stone.
Well, I've kind of had that happen somewhere along the way in ritual with people overstepping their bounds, like on a few occasions. So you have to kind of sometimes be clear. So.
Okay. I wasn't going there, but if you feel like it needs to be said, then you said it. Wow. Anyway, so, you know, what else did you want to say? You know, I kind of barreled ahead with this section of it. So, you know, please jump in now and
save you.
Well, I don't think
I'm
save
kidding.
Me. I'm not, don't
no,
save.
I'm teasing you. I'm teasing you. Well, you know, one of the things that's very difficult to do in a coven setting, is when you have people who join the coven, but they don't all necessarily have the same confidence level when it comes to doing workings, or the same style. You know, some people are just, I have to have the right tablecloth, I have to have the right colored candles, they have to be the right kind of candles, I have to have the right, you know, candelabra, I have to have the perfect incense, I have to have flowers, I have to have all this stuff on my altar in order for me to be able to shift and get into my, you know, spell working space. Other people are more like, well, let's just do it. I don't need all that other crap. Let's just do it. I know what I need to do. It's all up here in my head, and I don't need flowers and tablecloths and crystals and candles. I just need me and my relationship to the divine. So let's just go. And some people fall somewhere in between those two extremes. So sometimes it's kind of difficult to get everybody together on the same page, moving in the same direction. Also, sometimes some people will be very crafty and they really do want to make a poppet, and other people will be like, no, I'm going to maybe tie a couple of knots at a string. That's about as close to a poppet as I'm going to get. So you have to remember to take all of those different personalities into account, and you're going to have to make all of those people happy, which can sometimes be very difficult. So it should be a consensus decision in those situations. How much are we going to let, you know, D over there run away with all the, you know, accoutrement that we could have on the altar? You know, are we going to, maybe we should tell her she can only put out, you know, these five things instead of the 50 things she would like to put out. Maybe we have one person bring flowers, we have another person bring, you know, salt, we have another person bring feathers, we have another person bring, however you want to do it. But do it logically and do it by consensus, because there's nothing worse than being a part of a group and feeling that you're never included or never honored in any way as part of that group mind. It's a very tricky thing to do, is to balance everybody's personalities and to make sure everybody feels included and a part of the ritual, and that they're represented and their sensibilities are represented. Because as I said, some people are going to be like, well, I want to have everything, you know, the way I like it. I want to have the flowers and I want to have the tablecloth and I want to have the crystal, you know, and other people are going to be like, no, I don't want that. And how do you balance that? And that can be a particularly difficult problem when you have people that come from very different traditions and very different backgrounds.
Yeah, well, I mean, I admit I like a little bit of the dress-up. I can do without it, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I can sit on a park bench and do ritual without moving a muscle. But when I have the opportunity, yeah, I like to have, you know, I like to have the tablecloth and the candles and the candle holders colored. And I mean, do I like all that stuff? Sure. I mean, and I think that there's a time and a place for that.
Mm-hmm.
But like you said, if it's a, you know, a simple full moon around the campfire, probably not going to have as much accoutrement as you might in an indoor ritual with a, you know, big space. And if you're doing a large group ritual, you might want to have a little more flash to help people to understand where we're going and what we're doing.
Uh-huh.
Whereas a small group can sometimes get by with less.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, like you said, the balance is there somewhere. I mean, I used to do rituals with 7 torches outdoors.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes there were ribbons tied to them to indicate, you know, colors and stuff like that. But sometimes it was just 7 torches, and that's all we had to work with.
Mm-hmm.
But that worked out pretty well. So, you know, I've done everything from that to, you know, large, lots of, you know, lots of stuff. I remember a Samhain ritual a few years ago that was bordering on over the top even for me.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, but it was meaningful, like you said, to the people that were working.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, sometimes as leaders, we kind of let people, if they're really that engaged in it, let them play.
Mm-hmm.
It makes the experience great. And maybe then we start wrapping up, because we are just about 5 from the top of the hour.
Okay.
This has flown by. But, you know, one of the things that we have to remember as ritual leaders is that we are very often doing this for others. It's very easy to get wrapped up in our own egos and say, well, this is what I want to accomplish. But if that's not what the participants in the ritual need, if it doesn't serve them, then all we're doing is serving our own vanity. So, you know, keeping in mind, like Robin said earlier, it's about the experiences of the people in the ritual. If we provide them with an experience and to help them attain that through our ritual, then we've done our job. It's not about what we necessarily want or necessarily what we do at home. It's about leading others and helping them with their experience. So, Rob, any final thoughts along that line? Or?
Yeah, I mean, yeah, as I said, this is about helping people who come to your rituals have a positive experience, and to help them find experience and have it validate for them their path. Because after all, you know, we can't tell other people how to practice and what they should do, but we can help them to have a good experience that they will carry with them and say, I worship the way I do. I have the relationship with deity that I do because, hey, I had this really cool experience. I've had these really cool experiences. And that's really how we base our beliefs and our faith, are on our experiences and what we know to be our personal truth. And so that's the responsibility of the high priest and priestess, is to guide people to their personal truth through experiences that they may have. And I guess I can't say it any more simply than that.
All right. Well, with those thoughts, how does someone get in touch with us, darling?
Just open the back door and yell. No, I'm just kidding. You can certainly get in touch with us at littlestonebridge@gmail.com. We get a lot of emails, so please put something in your subject line that will say to us, you know, question about the radio show, comment about the radio show. Don't just say, hi, Robin and Terry, because so much junk mail starts that way in the subject line. So there's that, and there's also our Facebook pages, and you can get in touch with us on Little Stone Bridge Pathworking's Facebook page. You can also get in touch with myself at my Facebook page, which is Robin A. McKean, on Facebook. You can also get in touch with Terry at his Facebook page, which is Rev Terry Power HP. And there is a email address for the radio station, which Terry is going to tell us because I can never remember it.
That email address is surn.org@gmail.com.
That's
there's also There's also Spiritual Unity Radio Network Facebook page. Mm-hmm. So
yep.
Check us out on Facebook or email us. Littlestonebridge@gmail.com is a really good way to find us.
Yep.
A couple of programming notes. I've already mentioned that Thursday night coming up is Utu Witch Doctor and Miriam, his voodoo priestess from New Orleans. We're going to be talking about ancestor stuff and voodoo and spooky stuff just a few nights before Samhain. And let's see, then a week from that, on the 3rd of November, we're going to be doing a live remote from the Florida Pagan Gathering. We'll be flying down there, and we will be appearing at the Florida Pagan Gathering, the Samhain Harvest Gathering event. And if you're in the Southeast U.S., well, actually, if you're anywhere, just get on a plane, fly down to Orlando, and come down to Lake Wales, Florida, for the Florida Pagan Gathering, the 3rd, 4th, 5th, and 6th of November. We'll be down there. We're doing a couple of workshops, We're going to have some time set aside, probably sitting over at the author's tent and just hanging out with people and chit-chatting. So come on down and see us. It's a family event, plenty for everybody in the family to do. Let's see. Then the 8th of November, we'll be doing our energy raising show talking about the raising of energy to go along with the workings that we've talked about tonight. And let's see, I think that's far enough in advance to talk about, although, let's see, in March we will be running one of the tracks at the Earth-Centered Clergy Conference in Indianapolis. And then in June we're going to be at Sumerifair, a Sumerian Ren Fair kind of situation. So a lot of cool stuff, a lot of opportunities to see Robin and I and interact with us. If you want us to come speak at any of your events or speak to a group, do workshops. We do a lot of workshops on couples communications, group communication. Please give us a quick email at the littlestonebridge@gmail.com address. Robin, was there anything else?
That's about it.
Okay, so I guess it's final thoughts. It just feels flat to end right here. So any final thoughts you want to share with our listeners?
Nope.
Okay.
I pretty much said my...
Yeah, I just want to reiterate what we both said there at the end, that as leaders conducting ritual for others, there's a certain level of responsibility to assist the participants in having an experience. And whatever we can do for them to assist them in that experience or having that experience, that connection to the divine in some way, then we've done our job. And so be mindful of the participants and realize that, you know, things may not always go the way we would do them at home, but we are doing for others. This is like we truly are servants, serving the people that have come to us for our ritual. So I believe that's about it. Last chance, did you have anything? I guess
nope.
Not.
Nope.
All right.
Nope.
Well, with that, I guess we will wish you all a week filled with love and with wonder. Good night, everyone, and blessed be.
Blessed be.
Thanks for listening to the Spiritual Unity Radio Network. Join us 7 nights a week for exciting programming covering a variety of expressions of faith. And remember, all manifestations of the divine are equally valid.